Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back. A nice Monday to you all. We had ourselves a good show today. The Warriors sent the Cavs home to Cleveland down 0-2. LeBron drops a triple-double, and the Cavs still lose by 19. Plus, the Preds got right back in the Stanley Cup Finals. Smashville got loose, but nobody more so than the Ryan brothers. We had three good guests: ESPN's Chris Haynes, St. Louis Cardinals infielder Jed Jerko, and Toronto Blue Jays second baseman Devin Travis. That and Smack-Off season is heating up. Get a listen to the guys contending for a golden ticket. It did not go well. Alvin, let's go ahead and roll this thing. Let me start with game two of the NBA Finals. The Cavs are D-E-A-D, dead, dead, dead. They did adjust physically and mentally. They came out a lot more aggressively. They played with more energy than they did in game one. And they did play better. They played better and they still got hammered. They played better, but even on a night when LeBron James had a triple-double by the third quarter, Kevin Love had his best postseason game ever, Draymond Green was in foul trouble all night long, and they turned the Warriors over 20 times. Despite all those things, they still got blasted. Fact is, Cleveland's best is not going to be Golden State's best. That's pretty obvious. The Cavs' A game, provided they can even find it, will not be Golden State's B game. They're just outclassed. Even worse, they've been blown out two games in a row, and they still have not seen Golden State's best. Golden State can still play better. At this point, it's not a matter of if Cleveland can win this series. It's a question of whether or not they'll even get it back to Oracle. And you Cavalier fans can try and tell yourselves that Golden State only held serve, that you were in the same exact position last year, down two games to none, coming back home, and then it was three games to one, that you've done it before against these guys, that you can do it again. That's the thing. You haven't done it before against these guys, because this is not the crew that you beat last year. This team is obviously much better, much hungrier, and much more focused than that team that blew that 3-1 lead. And you're not winning 4 or 5 against this crew, especially since nobody is stepping up consistently to help LeBron. I mean, it's not LeBron's fault they're down 2 games to none. In fact, LeBron's never played better in the postseason than he is right now. And exactly what does he have to show for it? A possible broom job in the finals. He's doing his job. Too bad nobody else on the Cavs, other than Kevin Love last night, did theirs. And those two alone are not going to beat Golden State. Kyrie Irving has to do a hell of a lot more than he did last night. Tristan Thompson is going to have to do a hell of a lot more than nothing if the Cavs are going to get back in this series. I mean, Thompson was such a big factor last year at this time. Has he even bothered to get off the bus? And while J.R. Smith, I'm sure, has a lot on his mind right now, and he has to be playing with a really heavy heart, he's given them nothing. Never mind making a shot, he's not even looking for one. Nor are they getting anything from Kyle Korver or Deron Williams or anybody else. LeBron is still the best player in the world, but he's not beating the best team in the league by himself. And not just the best team in the league, but a team that's going to go down as one of the best ever. A team that won 67 games in the regular season, has two MVPs in Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, who are in the prime of their careers and have never been more locked in than they are right now. The league's best defensive player and one of its best two-way players in Draymond Green, and one of the best ever at shooting it in Klay Thompson, who's also an unbelievable defender. And they've won 14 straight this postseason while looking to run the table. The Cavs aren't beating these guys. Not the way LeBron's supporting cast is playing, and he knows it. How frustrated do you think LeBron is right now? How pissed do you think LeBron is with the other guys on his team? He wouldn't even do his normal post-game presser on the dais, opting instead to just answer questions in the locker room. And that really didn't go well for anybody, especially the dude who tried to ask him this question.
LeBron, you just feel this is a case where you guys need to defend home court at this point?
Are you a smart guy?
Think so.
You think so, right? So if we don't defend home court, what happens?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
I'm asking you.
Well, yeah, then you guys are looking at getting swept.
All right. So the answer to your question.
The question was, is this a case, LeBron, where you have to defend the home court? So given the nature of that question, LeBron actually handled that pretty well. You're a pretty smart guy, right? What do you think? They are down 2-0. I half expected LeBron to say at one point, please direct all questions to Tristan Thompson, if you can find him, because I haven't seen him in quite some time. I mean, sure, the Cavaliers will play better. They'll be more comfortable back home. They're not going to just roll over and die, because LeBron would never allow that. But there's not going to be any crazy comeback this year. They may have come back on last year's Warriors squad, but there's no way they're doing it to this year's version. They're just not. And why? Because once again, Golden State is a much different team. Why are they a different team? Obviously, they've got Kevin Durant. That's not the only reason they're different, but that's the biggest reason they're different. And I want to get to that a little bit later on. So take either side. I've got plenty more to talk about with relation to Game 2. But they're not coming back. They're not winning 4 out of 5. Not on these guys. 1-800-636-8686. And isn't this what everybody was so concerned about when Kevin Durant went there? Well, you're getting exactly what you'd expect and even more. I mean, Durant's gone to another level. He's gone to a different place altogether. And come to find out, the guy can play a little D, too. We're joined right now by an NBA reporter for ESPN. He's all over the finals. Chris Haynes is my guest. My man, good to have you back, Chris. How are you?
Jim, I'm doing fine, man. Glad to be back.
Good to have you back, Chris. All right, let's talk about what we've seen so far. Before the finals, Chris, you predicted Golden State in 7 after watching the first 2 games of the series. How do you feel about that prediction right now?
Well, I definitely feel good about them, you know, being on top and ultimately winning. Hey, Jim, I'm still going to pause quite a bit. I know the way and the fashion that they've beaten the Cavaliers over the first 2 games. I understand it hasn't been pretty, but there's something about going back home, and particularly going back home with the LeBron James-led team, that I would just be a little cautious on. And I know a lot of people are, you know, changing their predictions now, going to 5, and some people even saying a sweep. You know, role players play better at home. There's just a dynamic that shifts and changes when you switch the landscape. And so I just want to wait to see what Game 3. Game 3 is definitely the make-or-break game for the Cavaliers.
Right, so let's stay with the Cavaliers for a minute. You covered them in the past, so you know them pretty well. What do you think their mood is like right now, going back to Cleveland, down 2-0, and losing the way they did?
You know what? I went inside the Cavaliers locker room after the game. A lot of guys were just dejected. Most for the most part, was non-responded. Heads were lowered. Kevin Love was at a locker stall, like kind of separated from everybody else, just sitting down with a towel on his leg and just, you know, with his head down, just quiet. It's a surreal feeling. And the Cavaliers have been in this position before, but I still think they felt, in all honesty, like they were going to get one, at least one game on this trip. And for it to happen the way it has occurred, I think that's why you see the frustration setting in with LeBron. His body language has been pretty poor in these first 2 games. He's never really had to guard anybody like Kevin Durant in the finals. LeBron doesn't get any rest, offensively or defensively. Durant is playing solid D. You look at what Durant has done on LeBron. LeBron has 6 turnovers and only 4 made field goals when Durant is guarding him. So he clearly has his work cut out for him like never before.
Chris Haynes covers the NBA for ESPN. You know, Chris, you make the point that LeBron is really, he's not getting any rest at all. He's got to play both ends of the floor. Not only is he not getting rest, he's not getting a whole lot of help either. He played out of his mind yesterday, 29 points, 14 assists, 11 boards. So what do you think that he's thinking right now, not just about that series, but also about the help that he's getting from some of his teammates?
Well, obviously he's disappointed, and he's the type of guy where he'll let his teammates know he's disappointed them. You know, J.R. Smith has been non-existent offensively in this series and defensively, for that matter. Klay Thompson, who's not known for dribble penetration, has just been getting by on him and getting to the bucket. So there are talks about there being some lineup changes, possibly Iman Shumpert starting in place of J.R. Smith. So there, Cleveland is at a point, at a juncture right now in the series where they have to look at making some moves and some changes. And typically you don't see that coming from a team that is well-equipped as the Cavaliers. Because you look at, Jim, you look at that squad, man, they're deep. They have talent, and there's not much lack of talent at each position. They're pretty stacked. So for them not to be playing to up to their level of play is very disappointing. And I think that's why you're seeing LeBron in a way he's kind of feisty and testy in his post-game interview.
Clones, I need to get at you so I can talk to you about Ferguson. Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products, but what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle.
Yeah, Chris, you're right. They've got a lot to offer. I mean, I don't know where Tristan Thompson is. I know Kyrie's not playing like Kyrie. Bottom line, I mean, is there something that Ty Lue can do to get these guys going, or is this just the way it's going to be?
You know, I don't know if that's the way it's going to be. Look, I still think the Warriors are going to beat, you know, take this championship. But home court, you know, guys tend to play better at home. You know, the road guys, the Iman Shumpers, the Darren Williams version of today, you know, those guys just tend to play better at home. And so I think that's what they're banking on with a few changes. But it's going to be a very difficult task. You know, LeBron James, he's stats. You look at offensively, he's there. He's active. He's engaged. Triple-double numbers. You can't dispute that. But look, man, when you're not able to play free safety like he's been able to play over the last couple of years on D, it takes his toll, man. Like, the KD is a piece of work, man. And, you know, like, there's people talking about KD has been the best player in the series. LeBron James doesn't like to hear that type of stuff, and he's been hearing that. And I've been told that he's heard that chatter. But, you know, this is going to be something where I feel like the series isn't over as of now. I want to see how the Cavaliers come out in Game 3. But it sure looks like right now that they just don't have the depth that we thought they did.
Chris Haynes joining us. Hey, Chris, if he doesn't like hearing that KD has been the best player in this series, he's really not going to like hearing that Paul Pierce said that KD's not the best player in the world. So talk about
KD. He heard that.
You know he did. You know he did.
Yeah.
All right, so what about KD and Steph Curry? I mean, we're talking about a couple of MVPs, but they're playing their very best basketball of the season right now. What do you think when you see the two of them, and then how do you explain the two of them playing at this level against the second-best team in the NBA?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that question, Jim. I spoke with Stephen Curry after the game last night on his way out the arena, and I asked him, man, like, last year he was dealing with that MCL sprain. And I asked you, what has been the pain difference level compared from last year to now? And he said, look, obviously I'm not dealing with that. I don't want to make any excuses, but, you know, I wasn't 100% last year. This year I am. And he said another thing about this finals is that, look, over the last couple of years, he's taken some heat for not showing up and playing to the Steph level that he played it during the regular season. And so he wanted to make sure he came in here fresh, determined, and he wants to put an end to all those doubters, people that say that he couldn't play at this level. He's definitely doing that, and we're seeing that in his play. Kevin Durant, I was told before the finals, stop watching sports talk shows, stop listening to sports talk radio. He completely zoned out. He's just watching movies and playing video games. That's the extent of his time, you know, between off days. And so you can see how focused he is, determined he is, to try to dethrone LeBron, because people don't notice KD always felt like he is the best player in the league, that he is that guy. And he's always been outclassed, outshined by LeBron James and all the accolades LeBron has accumulated. Kevin Durant wanted to be mentioned in that talk. We're seeing that now, as you mentioned, Paul Pierce saying commentary as such. But it's still going to take two more wins for both of those guys to fully to get the praise that, you know, that they've been so gravitating towards. So as of right now, they're halfway there.
Chris Haynes, NBA reporter for ESPN, joining us. All right, Chris, so what about those two wins? Say they get those two wins, and say they get them pretty quickly. If you fast forward and assume that series could end in four, maybe five games, just play along. Last week, you and Ramona Shelbourne reported that Durant would be willing to take less than the max that he could receive this summer in order to keep the core of the Warriors intact, what would that mean for the ability of this team to stay together?
What that does is that enables the Warriors to re-sign their core nucleus. Stephen Curry would receive his supermax. Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston will be able to receive salaries that are comparable to the outside market. If Durant, it would be $4 million less that he would be taking. If Durant were to say, hey, I want all of my money, give me that extra $4 million, the Warriors would have to renounce Iguodala and Sean Livingston, and they wouldn't be able to offer them a salary that they will surely be getting out on the market. So that helps them keep this core intact. And what that does is this, Jim, that sends a ripple effect, because now the likes of Chris Paul, they seriously have to decide on, okay, man, look, Golden State is going to be dominant for the next 3 or 4 years. Cleveland possibly for the next 2 or 3 years. What am I going to do? Do I stay here with the Clippers, where I've spent already 5 seasons with this nucleus and we have yet to make it to the conference finals? Or do I go to a team such as the San Antonio Spurs and try to match the power and strength that is of those two juggernaut teams? Then you have other teams that have to decide, hey, look, do we just wait out the Cleveland and Golden States of the world, wait out and wait till their talent subsides and so we can step in? Or do we try to just go all full throttle and try to overhaul our talent and bring in some juggernaut players? You know, this is what the league and some star players, this is the kind of decision they're going to have to make. Do they wait out the talent of these teams, or do they try to go in and try to compete with them? So that's going to be the struggle in this offseason, where people are going to have to make some critical decisions about their future.
Right, but then how long do you wait? I mean, for instance, Golden State's been in the finals 3 years in a row, and assuming everybody stays healthy and guys do re-sign and Durant takes less, I mean, this run could go on and on and on. You've got two Hall of Famers in the prime of their career under the age of 30. And then, Chris, what about Cleveland? Where would that leave them? I mean, you talk about everybody else, but what about the Cavaliers? They were 12-1 through the first three rounds. They're clearly one of the two best teams in the NBA, but it seems like the gap between them and the Warriors is pretty wide. So if they do get swept or they lose in five, what do you think LeBron and the Cavaliers think about that, and how would they react? In other words, do they bring the same group back and try and run it back, or do they try and shake that roster up completely?
You know, that's a good question, Jim. I think in years past, you know, like say last year if the Warriors closed out that series and won the finals, you know, 4-1. There's no doubt in my mind Kevin Love would not have been back. There's no doubt in my mind. And so I think that's the same case. LeBron James has made it known that while he's in Cleveland, he put the onus on management and ownership to give him a roster that could compete for championships year after year. It's not going to be good enough for LeBron to just make it to the finals every year, because they will do that. There's nobody in the East that can contend with them, that can mess with them. Nobody. I don't even care what Boston does, unless they get the likes of a Paul George. But LeBron's not going to be happy about that. So if the Warriors are to get this series over with in 4 or 5, I would expect Cleveland to make some moves. And what is that move? I don't know, because, you know, there's always been talk about Chris Paul, LeBron James teaming up at some point, but I just don't know if the chemistry fits with them. Obviously, they're smart guys. They probably can make it work and play at some high of a level, but those are two ball-dominant players. And will it work with Kyrie Irving as well? There will be some moves made to answer your question, Jim. I'm just not sure what move is out there that would put them on the same scale as the Warriors or elevate them past the Warriors.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I believe this, but I'll pose the question, Chris. What about another ball hog or ball dominant player like Carmelo Anthony? Would that work? How likely is that?
Well, I don't know if it would work, but I do know that they were talking at the trade deadline. Me and Mark Stein reported that early January. Those talks definitely could resurface. Because it's at this point, it's like if the Cavaliers feel like, hey, all they can do right now is get to the Eastern Conference Finals, then why not kick the tires on a Carmelo-Kevin Love swap and just see what can happen? You know, because I guess they feel like with Kevin or with Carmelo, they can still advance to the finals. Now, they don't know what they can do with Carmelo. I think they have a pretty good idea what they can do with Kevin Love. Now, remember, this is hindsight. This is if Warriors are to finish them off relatively soon. So it's going to be up for discussion if it all goes as to what everybody is expecting now for it to end short. LeBron won't just be stand pat, and he won't just be happy with just continually going to the finals.
So how was your weekend? Did you get loose? Did you party? Doesn't matter. Not in this sense. Because no matter how hard you went, I know it was not half as hard as Smashville, Tennessee. I mean, damn. Have you seen these people? You've heard the phrase, one drink, one stop, there's a better party, and we're not at it. Well, Smashville is that better party. And for all of Saturday night, well, most of Saturday night, minus the 20 minutes or so of that first period when Jake Guentzel buried another one in the back of the net. At that point in the series, it was Guentzel 4, Nashville 4. Music City was as quiet as it's ever been. The city where even the airport books live music gigs went silent. A not this again feel as they stared 3-0 in the face. But then the second period started. Then things got lit. The party amp got turned up to 11. Nashville scored. And then 48 seconds later, they scored again.
Yarncroft looking. Cross-ice pass. Yossi tees one up and scores! A power play goal. Roman Yossi beats Matt Murray, tying this game at one. Now Yossi up the left side, backhanded along by Watson for Gaudreau. Moves it with a shot. He scores! Frederick Gaudreau, 2-1 Predators.
Thanks to Westwood One for that. Those two goals were the only pieces of flint that Smashville needed to ignite that fire once again. From the second period to the final horn to well into Sunday morning, absolute domination. The 6-1-5 was on another level. In fact, let me break this down in terms that you'll understand. It was a 5-catfish kind of night. Or for Pittsburgh, it was a 5-instruments-of-crime kind of night. One guy that I don't have to remind would be that dude between the pipes for the Pens, Matt Murray. He knows better than anybody because he had 17,000-plus clogging his ears with pure hell.
Anders Åberg couldn't hold the puck in. Kessel with a stab at it, knocked the puck into the attacking zone. Malkin's in after it. That chant is, it's all your fault.
Thanks to Sportsnet. Once again, that's not original. That's not that we haven't heard that before, but we've never heard it quite like that. It's all your fault. It's all your fault. We talked earlier in the postseason about the party that Nashville throws for every single game. But again, these folks truly took this to a place that even I thought that they would never get to. Roughly 67,000 sweaty souls all smashed together in a 6-block stretch on Lower Broad. Every 3- to 4-story bar along that strip opened up at 9:30 in the morning and filled to capacity. Every rooftop packed, and it was even worse on the street, shoulder to drunk shoulder. Kind of like a mini corner of Clark and Addison when the Cubs ripped the World Series. And if you think that was just the weekend crowd, think again. Game 4 is going to be just as lit, if not more so. In fact, are there any of you right now who've already started that could responsibly get through a phone call? Hit me up right now. Anybody down there listening, if you can get through a phone call responsibly, hell, even if you can't, go ahead and give me a call. I'll take care of the rest. This is a chance to tie that series up in their own barn before a business trip back to Pittsburgh. So game 4 is going to be every bit as lit. It doesn't matter when that goes down. Weekend, middle of the week, end of the week. Fans were lining up at 6 a.m. this morning for a 1 p.m. concert and a 7 p.m. puck drop. Rest of us would probably be dead by 7. You imagine what they're going to be like for that game? I mean, their game, literally. Their tailgate starting at 6 a.m. for a 7 p.m. puck drop. They were lining up at 6 in the morning. It's insane. Look, I'm not saying that they've got this. It's still a long trek with the defending champ standing in the way. But if this city ever found a way to bring home the cup, it'd be like Mardi Gras on roids. Then again, they really don't even have to win for for that city to go off. Nashville partied hard for the Titans when they lost the Super Bowl. And I don't know that the Preds are going to win the Cup. They might. I don't know. But I know this much. Regardless, their kegs are going to be tapped, their red solo cups will be full, and the catfish will be on ice. Because while I know a lot of folks who can get after it, I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody get down the way Smashville does. We go to Nashville. Charlie, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, I couldn't safely make it to a phone because I'm busy driving down to the point, to the rink. But I got to pick up my catfish on the way down to Broadway. It is electric down here in the Music City, Jim. I can't believe it. I've never witnessed anything sports like it in my life. I was there at Game 3, almost 70,000 strong out there on Broadway partying, Don Cherry drinking beer till the middle of the night. It was classic. It was outstanding. And Game 4, as PK says, it's going to be lit. The Preds are going to win this thing tonight, Jim. They're taking it back to Pittsburgh, tied 2-2. They're going to make it a best of three. If you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. And there's nothing better than going up against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Live from Smashville, Jimmy. This is Crazy Charlie. I'm out.
Rack him. Crazy Charlie. Jed Jerko is my guest. Hey, Jed, before we get to baseball, there are so many more important, exciting things to talk about. Namely, you and your wife, Carly, welcomed a baby girl, Brooklyn, into the world last Tuesday. What was the last week been like for you, and how is Brooklyn doing?
Her and Carly are doing great. It's been a lot of fun. She's doing excellent. Everything went extremely well, and we're having a lot of fun with her, and our two younger boys are really enjoying her also.
I know your boys are twins. They're 3 years old. What do they make of the new arrival? What have they said?
She is more of a toy right now to them more than anything. They will not leave her alone.
I like it. Jed Jerko joining us. All right, Jed, that's great news. Now, you returned to the team yesterday in a tough loss to the Cubs. You're in your second season with the Cardinals, so knowing the nature of that rivalry, is it just one loss over the course of a long year, or because of that rivalry, does it sting a little bit more?
It always stings, especially losing to those guys, but you can't let that carry over. I think that's the most important thing. You know, it's in the course of a whole season, it really is just one game, and you got to put it behind you, and we got another game and an opportunity today.
Jed Jerko joining us. You know, the team got off to kind of a slow start, and there was some panic among the fans, and then the team turns it around, and while you've dropped a couple in a row, you're still just 2.5 games out of first. So how do you go about riding the ups and downs of a 162-game season without getting either too high or too low?
Yeah, you just got to know that it's going to happen. It's something that's going to happen regardless of what you do. So you just kind of got to keep that heel attitude and keep grinding away.
Now, you're among the league leaders, I mentioned, in batting in the National League. Earlier this season when you were asked about that, you said it was too early to talk about batting averages and things of that nature. So let me put it to you another way. How comfortable do you feel at the plate these days?
Feeling good. I think my swing is where it needs to be. My timing is good, and just try to go out there and keep having good at-bats and obviously do whatever it takes to try to get the wins.
Now, you had 30 home runs last season, including 23 after the All-Star break. So was there a moment last year where you felt like I found my swing? And if there is that moment, what does that feel like?
It was definitely a good feeling. There's no doubt about that. But I started to play a little bit more. I was more in a bench role, and opportunities kind of presented themselves, and kind of took off from there. Found my swing, was able to keep it the same and keep it repetitive, and going out and throwing that out there every day.
And that's always key, right? You want to find a way to keep the swing the same way and keep repeating it. I've also heard you talk about how the swing now feels a lot closer to the way it felt in 2010 and 2011 than ever before. I mean, was that a conscious process of trying to go back to what you were doing at that time, or is it something that simply happened over time?
I think it took time more than anything. I definitely went through some struggles in my second and third years in the big leagues, and then just kept learning, kind of understanding what pitchers are trying to do. You hated that it took that long, but it's glad that finally starting to figure it out and starting to find what my swing really is.
You know, you mentioned also opportunity is something. When you get consistent opportunities, it's going to make it easier, theoretically. I mean, the remarkable thing about last season is that you were putting up the power numbers at the plate, but you were moving around in the field and in the batting order. This season, you're starting third baseman. You're hitting primarily cleanup. So is there an advantage and a comfort that comes with knowing where you're going to play and where you're going to hit every single day when you come to the park?
Yeah, it's definitely comforting to know. You know, you don't really have to check the lineup as much anymore. But, you know, there's something to be said about the versatility also. It was something that, you know, I took pride in last year, being a guy that can really fill in anywhere. I think, you know, kind of where the game is headed today, there's every team starting to have that one guy that you almost count as a fifth infield starter more than anything. Just a guy that can move around and give guys rest when they need it.
Cards third baseman Jed Jerko joining us. So take me back to the early days in Morgantown, West Virginia, when you were growing up with your brothers Randy and Scott. What were those days like?
Some of them could be tough. You know, they're 5 and 7 years older than me. They didn't take it easy. There's no doubt about that. But you know, I was always just the younger brother that was straggling along, doing whatever they wanted to do.
All right. So I wonder then, Jed, what about you? Have 2 3-year-olds now, and they're kids, they're babies, but they're going to grow up, and they're probably going to be pretty competitive. Do you look for those kids? Are you going to constantly say, hey, pick each other up? Or are you going to kind of let them knock the hell out of each other and just do what boys do and compete?
I think it's going to be closer to the second one, but a little bit of both. Maybe let them go at it, and then when they're done and sweaty and worn out, try to teach them something at the end.
Right. The story also goes that since the time you were 5, you and your father, Randall, would work out with a family friend by the name of Jerry Mahoney on your game. How did that come to be, and what do you remember about those days?
That was my dad and him played softball, the old man softball together, and he's always just a guy that loved the game. He went to West Virginia himself and played, and it was early mornings every Saturday and Sunday around 6 a.m. We'd meet together with, you know, myself and a couple of the guys around town that were decent at baseball, and we would just get after it for about 5-6 hours and grind it out.
Devin Travis is my guest. So you beat the Yankees 3-2 yesterday, and that gave you a split of the series. Overall, the team didn't hit especially well with runners in scoring position, but you still found a way to win 2-4 against the division leader. How important was it to find a way to get that win yesterday?
Yeah, that was a big one yesterday. You know, anytime you're running up against the Yankees, you know you have a tough task at hand, and at that point we're 1-2 in the series, and the best we can do is even it out. So that was our goal definitely going into yesterday, and obviously a huge hit by JD there.
All right, now you were hit by a pitch in the 7th inning of yesterday's game, and while you stayed in the game to run the bases, you were taken out in the 8th inning. First of all, how were you able to grind through that pain and stay in the game at that time?
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, I've never been hit in my hands before, so that was definitely a little scary for me. I mean, I wasn't sure what exactly the verdict was going to be, but I knew I could at least run the bases with my hand. That's what I told Gibby I was going to do. I was going to stay in and run the bases, and we'll figure it out after the inning was over.
You know, to your point, you had never been hit by a pitch in the hands. That's got to be scary. The x-rays reveal that you did not suffer a broken wrist. So what was your reaction when you heard that news? How much of a relief was that?
Yeah, that was a big relief because the pain I was feeling was definitely telling me that, a break could be really possible. So that was exciting. I let out a big smile when I was told that. And yeah, that was great.
Blue Jays second baseman Devin Travis, my guest. You know, if we go back to April 28th, the team was just 6-17, and the team was battling injuries to guys like Josh Donaldson. It looked like that season might be over before the first month of the season had even ended. I mean, how that goes, right? That nobody's ever won a pennant in the first month, but teams have lost one. So what was the mood like in the clubhouse at that point?
Really throughout the struggle, the biggest thing that was preached to us by Gibby was just to stay the course, continue to keep fighting. I mean, early on, I'm not sure the numbers, but we were losing a lot of games, and every single game we were in, I mean, we were losing one by one run, whether it was a late comeback by us or the other team coming back late. We were in a lot of ball games, so just continuing to stay in the fight, continue to believe. I know for the young guys, it was big for us to be able to look to the veterans and guys throughout the clubhouse that have been through tough times before, and them staying positive and continuing to show up to the yard every day with a smile on their face and pumping us all up. That definitely helped out a ton also.
And it worked. I mean, since then, the team has gone 22-12, so you stay the course and you stay in the fight. I know you'd never want to make it about yourself, but you've been a huge part of that turnaround. As an example, you had knee surgery in the offseason, and it removed a small flap of cartilage. And then when the season started, you weren't as productive at the plate as maybe you'd like to be, but then you turned it around with that enormous month of May that I mentioned. So was that just a matter of getting healthy, or did you make any kind of adjustment or change in the batter's box?
You know, I felt healthy. My knee felt fine in April. I mean, it had nothing to do with my struggle. You know, I just think the biggest thing, honestly, was getting back into baseball shape and getting back into the flow of games again. I didn't have too many spring training at bats, and I think maybe I thought I was a little more ready to go than I truly was. And I just thank Gibby, man, for continuing to run me out there, continue to give me at bats. That was kind of it definitely helped a lot, you know, being able to show up to the yard and continue to go up there and see pitches, because at that point, that's the biggest thing you want, is just to continue to play and continue to get at bats, and that's the only way you're going to feel comfortable again. So I was definitely really thankful for that.
Well, that's huge. And then when you're up there and you're seeing those pitches, I wonder, can you explain what it's like when you get into the kind of groove that you did in May, when you hit 364, you have 16 doubles, you score 17 runs. When you're going that well, I mean, exactly what does it feel like? Does the ball seem bigger? Does the bat seem lighter? Does it feel exactly the same? What's a groove like that feel like?
I think the biggest thing is just being able to slow the game down. When you're struggling, you know, a lot of times we're just searching for the hit and you just want to swing, and you just want to feel that. You want that feeling so bad of hitting the barrel or touching first base and getting a hit that you start doing things that you normally don't do to be successful. And you know, when you're having a little success at the plate, it's a little bit easier to slow the game down and, you know, trust in your approach and look for pitches that you want to hit, and you know, being able to lay off the tough pitches. And the biggest thing really, yeah, is just trusting yourself through those times, and when you're struggling a little bit, it's a little harder to do so.
Let's talk about the Ryan Bros. Once again, it should be an absolute shock when a couple of former NFL coaches get into it in broad daylight with some locals. But when those two former NFL coaches are Rex and Rob Ryan, then it's the least surprising thing ever. The shock isn't that that happened, but that it took this long for that to happen. And in 2017, when every human being walking the planet may as well be a TMZ employee, that dust-up is going to end up on video, and it's going to go viral. And of course it did. My only complaint is that we don't have more video, because what I saw in that 10-second clip could carry this show for 3 hours. Let's start with the location. Downtown Smashville. A day after the Preds waxed the Pens, and a day after the Ryan brothers took sledgehammers to a Penguins car outside of Bridgestone Arena before Game 3.
A wild scene outside Bridgestone Arena. I think I know these two faces, Rex Ryan and Rob Ryan, taking their shot, smashing the car. Big Preds fans in attendance here.
You think you know those two faces? You think you know who those two guys are? Right, a couple of unemployed coaches who look like they put on a few. So the boys were loose Saturday night, as they always are. And cameras caught them inside the arena, inhaling grub and slamming Dos Equis. Stay thirsty, mis amigos. But it wasn't until the day after, Sunday, when the Twins were out seemingly for some hair of the dog at Margaritaville, when they really got nice. And to paint the picture, imagine this. Imagine a table inside a restaurant, but near an open-air wall. So even though they're inside the joint, their table is practically on the sidewalk. And this is what makes that video possible, because it was shot by somebody who happened to be walking by. Now, important to note, in defense of the big fellas, the video provides no context for how that fight started. But it's still pretty amazing, nonetheless. The two most recognizable twin brothers in sports, all, I don't know, 650 pounds of them, out of their chairs and on their feet, scrapping with some dude half their size who seemed to have gotten the better of Rex, at least in the video.
because it starts with my man getting put on ice skates. The dude they're fighting with, he's got a beer in his left hand, and yet he somehow turns Rex all the way around with a one-handed shove with his right. Not even sure how that's possible. But Rex was clearly overmatched by a guy who looks like he might weigh a buck 80. Moved off of his spot by a one-handed fighter, brawling about 150 pounds out of his weight class. And you know Rob was not having any of that. No way Rob was having any of that. No bro is going to disrespect his bro like that. So Rob, and you can see it on the tape, Rob goes for dude's trachea. Think Bobby Knight, quote, repositioning Neil Reed on the floor. You know, by his throat. But another dude pulls Rob off the bro before the bro can make Rob look as bad as the bro made Rex look. Now, the audio is not nearly good enough to play, but you can hear Rob yelling at the dude, get your bleeping ass out of here. Now, for what it's worth, I'm trying to look at that tape. A little grainy, but I'm trying to make some sense of it. I count 5 marks on the Ryan Bros table. 3 on Rex's side, 2 on Rob's. 2 versus 1, and somehow the dude who goes maybe a buck 80 came out looking much better. A few more questions. What the hell is Rex doing rolling in a Bryce Harper gamer? And why is that gamer 5 sizes too small? Maybe he was inspired by Harper charging Hunter Strickland. Although dude looked nothing like Harper in his Margaritaville scrap. Harper at least landed a shot, held his own. Based on this video, Rex had no business visiting that bro in his office. The second most obvious question. How did these two dudes get hooked that badly? How did the Ryan bros get hooked like that? You'd have to assume at this point they've heard every fat joke, every foot fetish joke, every you're the hood's bitch joke by now. How do you guys get paid to keep players in line? Or used to get paid to do that? Step that far out themselves. And in broad daylight at the most public place of the weekend, downtown Smashville. Now again, we don't know what precipitated this. Or maybe we do. Jessica Marie is the girlfriend of the guy who shot the video. And she says there is more to it than what is shown on the tape.
We were about to walk into Margaritaville, and all of a sudden I looked over and I happened to see this big guy. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Rob Ryan. This kid like came up to them and threw a drink in Rex's face. So he did that, and then Rob Ryan immediately stood up and he put the kid in like a ring around his neck, and I was like, oh my God.
Credit WYRK for that. Thank you. Hey, look, if that's true, and I don't know if that's true, the fact that this kid came up and just threw a drink in Rex's face, if that's true, does that change things? Is that a reason to go? It depends on who you ask, of course. If you ask my man Charles Barkley, getting a drink thrown in your face is 100% a reason to go.
Jim, I don't worry about what everybody thinks about me. Anybody sitting out there listening to your show, you can't let a random stranger just throw a drink in your face and say, oh, you know what? I'm in the limelight. I should let that go. That's never going to happen, Jim. If I'm sitting around with you one night and somebody throw a drink on me and you, we're going to beat the ass down, Jim. I promise you that.
They're going to sue you. That's what they want to do. They're trying to hook you, Chuck. They're trying to get you to bite so they get paid.
Jim.
And you
Jim,
know that.
I wish I could get to the point where I was mature enough to let that go. I wish I do. I wish I was man enough to let that go. But, Jim, I can't let it go. I'm not even going to lie to you. You know, me and you are cool. I ain't going to ever get on your show and lie to you. If you throw a drink on me, I'm going to beat your ass, plain and simple.
All right, so he's not saying, I don't know what I would do, or I think I might. He's just saying, plain and simple, if you throw a drink on me, I will beat your ass. So just as I tried to talk Chuck out of that then, I'll say the same thing about the Ryan Bros. If that's how it went down. I'm not sure it did. But if it did. Look, I understand that walking away from something like that is not an easy thing to do. Especially if you're minding your own business and some bag happens upon you and is looking to get you to swing on him so he can get paid. I get that, because there are plenty of no-life losers that will angle for an easy payday that way. And again, I don't know if that's what that guy did or not, but I know there are lots of bags that will and do. I know this much, though. Rex Ryan is never going to win a bar fight, because even if he wins it, he loses, because he's Rex Ryan, and he has a hell of a lot more to lose than some bag with no life who splashes a drink on him in a bar. I mean, if in fact that even happened. I don't even know if that's what happened. I know this. This guy's already coached himself right out of the NFL, and he hasn't even started his TV career yet, and he's already embarrassed himself and ESPN before even working his first day there. Look, there's no doubt the big fella will do fine on TV. He may never have been the coach that he led you to believe that he was, but the big boy can definitely bump his gums. He's got some of that it, and he'll probably excel at breaking down tape. So he should start with his own, that 10-second beauty that made the rounds that jumped the day. That's something I might actually flip the channel for. In the meantime, see if you can dry out, push away from the table, and make it to your first day of work without something like that happening again. The only thing more Ryan bro would be if they finished off that fight, swigged a who's to blame margarita, grabbed a plate of volcano nachos, and then hopped on a bicycle built for two and rode off into the sunset. That would have been the only thing more Ryan bro than that. This is the day this guy gets it. We go to Seattle. Marcus. Good morning, Marcus. How are you?
Man, I was fired up this morning. I like you said, I got no voice. I'm going to try to keep it quick. Hawk told me to be distinct, and every second counts. So. Rome, Jungle Residence, I'm not made man, but one day I want to be. I grew up in the jungle, born and raised in the jungle. Oh, I'm not talking about basketball or anything. Thanks for the recap on the bag, but I'll get to him another day. My issue is, I want that since there hasn't been an informal or formal, I want a formal review on the call that got racked today. I ain't saying it wasn't a good call. I'm not saying he deserves to get run. But that rack does not count. There are three rules in the jungle. And if you don't enforce them, I at least respect them. There's one. No.
That's not a good call. No.
Hey, Marcus.
You don't like that call.
I don't like
Instead
that
of
call.
My reviewing that call,
not a very good call
that got racked, why don't I just review the call you just made? It sucked. Silk in Huntington Beach. What's up, brah?
Brah, what is up,
brah? What's up?
Brah, you know I support the brand, brah. I'm sitting out in front of my local O'Reilly right now. Just returned my used oil and picked up some freshies for my wife's car, brah. So I had to give you a call.
Well
also,
done.
Oh, yeah, of course, brah. We recycle in California. We keep it real. It's golden ticket season, brah. It's Mac-off season. So I know people are calling trying to, get their groove on, but I got to address a couple of guys. This guy who just called from Seattle, I'm assuming he thought Hawk said not succinct, but he told him to stink. I mean, he sounded like a cross between sick Tiger Woods and field sobriety Tiger Woods. Of course, the guy has a cold. He's from Seattle, bro. You know how cold and damp it is up there. You know, we're not supposed to script our takes, and people should go with that. But if you're new and trying to get going ticket, a couple bullet points maybe, brah. Write down a couple of little lines. Get yourself together. And this kid, Zach, from Salt Lake, brah, he is stepping dangerously close to my brand, brah. He's doing what Jay Stu called walking the thin line of blasphemy in the jungle. There's already one fake Silk, brah. Two is one too many. And what my main point for calling is, brah, I know you love Big West sports, brah. And my alma mater, the mighty Cal State Long Beach Dirtbags, tonight will be playing their third game in 48 hours. They're going to be playing Texas for the third time. And at beautiful Blair Field tonight, 8 p.m., check. It's on one of the ESPNs, or if you're here, come on, get on down there. But it's a big matchup tonight, Brad. It's going to be hot. And when my mighty Cal State Long Beach 49ers/Dirtbags win tonight, it sets up an epic clash next week, brah, with Cal State Fullerton, and it will be awesome, brah. So everybody send good vibes out to the West Coast, brah, and smack off golden ticket hopefuls. Step your game up. Later, brah.
Rock him. Nice job, Silk. Making his bid for a golden ticket. He is new blood. Ivan, good morning. What's going on?
Jim Rome, how are you today, dude?
Dude, I'm great. Ivan, how about you?
Good, man. You know what? Hey, I'm kind of a newbie at this, but you know what? I get it, okay? Less in Laguna, big props on the helicopter gig, showing up in the studio last year. But you know what, man? Just be yourself. Make the call from a place where you belong and, frankly, where we all expect you to be, and that's OJ's prison cell. And you know what, Jim? This year, why don't you have a press conference after the smack-off? As myself as the winner and all the other callers answering questions by Rafael Nadal's reporter, and it could go something like this. Silk, congrats on the win. How do you feel about it, and are you ready to give it another try next year? Yeah, brah. I lost, by the way, brah. Yeah, I know, but it's a win anyway. Oh, really, brah? Jim, unlike Nadal, these losers will think they win. It's a win-win situation no matter what. Oh, and speaking of losers, Cleveland, this is for you. Tiger Woods singing the national anthem backwards, reciting his ABCs, has a better chance than Cleveland winning this year. And you know what, Jim? I could hang with these jungle bullies. I'm that kid that you'll see in school that gets picked on by these bullies and then just turns around and kicks them in the earth. And you know what, Jim? Finally, one last thing. Hey, let's not forget Canada. I am out.
He beat us. Clones, you know what to do. You hit subscribe. You tell a friend, and most of all, you trust the podcast. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it very much. Check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We'll see you then.